And we're back on Big Board Sports on a Monday. Danny Wexelman from SNY, and here on the my satellite radio
when
I'm cruising Sirius XM, who pops up more times than not? Danny Wexelman, and she's here joining us on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Danny, how are you?
My guys, it has been way too long. Good morning. Happy Monday. I'm so excited to be with you today.
It is
a pleasure
to have you, Danny. Always enjoy when I see Danny's going to be on the show. It makes for a better show. There's no doubt about it. And we roll with the baseball, and we're now towards the tail end of July, almost into August, the stretch run of the Major League Baseball season. And I guess we start with the team that we carry here, Danny, and that's the New York Yankees. And they did win 2 out of 3 over the weekend against Atlanta, the big win on Saturday night with that grand slam by Grisham to make a big comeback. What's your take on the New York Yankees here, where they sit, what they need to do here to get over the hump, and a big series in Toronto tonight?
Yeah, oh my gosh, it's going to be such a great week. And I think number one is there's so much to look forward to with this team. And Brian Cashman has made it a point of emphasis to use keywords like, I need to be aggressive at the trade deadline. And we need a starting pitcher. We need bullpen help. We need a third baseman. He called it an infielder. I'll call it a third baseman. And so he's been really specific about what his team needs and really honest about what his team needs. So that tells me that they are going to be in the thick of this race. Now, here's the thing. You look at them and you're like, how did they get in second place? What is wrong? What is going on? And there's really nothing, guys, that you can overall say, well, it's definitely this or it has to be this. Like, yes, does the offense need to be more consistent? Yes, it does. They still have a plus 112 run differential, guys, which is one of the best in all of baseball. Second best to the Chicago Cubs. So they're scoring a lot, right? They lost Clark Schmidt. That is a blow. They have to find a way to replace him. It doesn't have to be a frontline starter. It can be a guy who's a veteran, I don't know, like Mitch Keller, like Seth Lugo, to come in, eat those innings, and just keep things steady and calm. And then the bullpen, right? A lot of people are looking at the bullpen and really clamoring for help there. And I'll tell you this. They have blown the fewest amount of games in the league. They only have 10 blown saves. That's the fewest. Number one. Luke Weaver over the last month has looked a little more human, right? The ERA is above 5. Devin Williams, I think, is still trying to find his footing, but has been better as of late. But they need help back there. And there are some big names like Emmanuel Clase from the Guardians that could come in and help. And I think what you saw from Anthony Volpe over the weekend is what he can be. You want to see him put it together. It's been underwhelming from him. I'm the first to admit it. Guys, and this is somebody I covered in high school. I know his family well. The defense has not been up to the standard that we need it to be, that anybody expects it to be. He won a gold glove his first year, and he knows that, right? Nobody's putting more pressure on himself than he is coming up, being a starting shortstop for the New York Yankees. It can't just be Aaron Judge, right? Somebody else in that lineup has got to come produce. But overall, like, this is still a top 10 team. There's just all these little minor places that need some upgrades. It's like a squeaky faucet that you're like, I'll fix it later. And then all of a sudden it's like a rushing body of water that overwhelms you. So I like this team a lot. I'm excited about them, but Brian Cashman has work to do.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, for sure. Suarez is the name that keeps coming up. I don't know. Are they going to deal Suarez? Does he end up with the New York Yankees? That's the big question. He's coming off a huge weekend. The guy's on fire right now.
Yeah, Gino Suarez is such a blast, right? Number one, he's top 10 offensively in the league. He's on pace to have a career season for himself, kind of getting back to his old ways. And it's ironic because Seattle traded him to Arizona, and now Seattle might be interested in him as well. So two things about Gino. Number one, he is going to produce that power for you. It will most likely be a better scenario if he gets traded to New York, right? A better ballpark for him. I think Seattle is tough to hit the ball out. And number two, what I've heard about him is how great of a clubhouse guy he is and how he's a glue guy and he's got this energy and he brings something to the clubhouse that you have to have in October, right? Think about like a Jock Peterson type guy. He's going to give you that spark. He's going to keep things light, but he understands the assignment. He understands why he's being brought in. But here's the thing, guys, is that Arizona is still in the thick of the race, right? Mike Hazen actually was on our channel yesterday, the general manager of that team, trying to figure out what direction they're going to go. And here's the clue. Pay attention to their bullpen. If their bullpen cannot get it together in the next week, expect expect them to probably be sellers and unfortunately have to part ways with Geno Suarez if they cannot get their bullpen together. But they're only 4.5 back in the National League wildcard race. That's not so large that they cannot overcome it. They've got some holes to fill, but you could see guys like Zach Gallen or Merrill Kelly and Geno Suarez all departing from Arizona if they decide they want to be sellers and they're not going to be in the postseason race. But Geno Suarez is the belle of the ball. He is the prize, and I think any team would be so lucky to get a guy like him, not just because of what he does at the plate and the power, but because what he brings to a clubhouse.
We're talking with the great Danny Wexelman here on Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, and the free 104.5 The Team app. Make sure you follow her on Twitter, at Danny Wex. Danny, I know it was just last week, but what did you make of the All-Star game, the swing-off, the ABS challenge system? What was your overall opinion and take on the Midsummer Classic?
I was impressed. I was really impressed by the league. Number one, the tribute to Hank Aaron that ended up falling on 7/15 for his 715 home runs, I thought was extraordinary. They went out of their way to make that a moment that nobody in baseball will ever forget. I saw that CC Sabathia was the brains behind it and bringing that technology to this game. And I think people don't realize that a lot of other sports have captivated their fans in this way, using technology like this, and baseball's a little behind. Baseball's always a little behind, right? And I thought that they did a wonderful job in that regard. It was the first time that we got to see the swing-off in a game that was introduced in 2022, but we haven't seen it yet. And so that was the first time, and wow, was it special, right? Like, there are people who are wondering, well, what if we put it in the regular season? But I think what makes it so special is that you only saw it one time. You only got to see it during that one moment. And then I thought the derby was really cool, guys. Like, Cal Raleigh, with his dad pitching to him and his younger brother behind the plate, I thought was really special. And so I just thought in general, like, you know, the draft was great. My one gripe, I would say, guys, is that there were no draftees at the draft. And that's got to change. Like, the league has to find a way to get those guys there. And I know that there was a conversation about advisors saying, it's too big of a risk. There's too many conversations going on. We don't want those guys going. We don't know where they're going to fall. But you can't tell me that you didn't know Ethan Holliday was going to go in the first five picks, right? Like, you can't tell me that you didn't know some of those college arms like Cade Anderson and Liam Doyle and Jamie Arnold were going to go in the first round. And so I'd like the league to try harder. And I think it's really important because the other sports find ways to get their guys there. And it just is a horrible showing when you can't get one prospect to show up in person. And to them, it's a huge marketing deal, right? Like, you get all the attention. Everyone in baseball is there. And so I would have loved to see that happen. But overall, guys, I give it an A. Like, I was so impressed by the week.
Danny Wexelman with us as we talk MLB here in a big series tonight in Toronto. How do you look at, who do you give the edge to here? I mean, Toronto, I mean, some people are still saying, I don't necessarily believe in the Toronto Blue Jays. It'll be the Yankees end up winning this division. Where do you stand on Toronto, and how do you look at this three-game set?
Well, I was impressed by Toronto over the weekend, too, guys. Like, a huge series for them, and I think it's setting them up to have some consistency right now against New York. You can't underestimate what their pitching staff has done. They've kind of found a groove in that regard. Their offense has been led by George Springer. It's a bit of a resurgence for him. And if you haven't been paying attention, he was absolutely an all-star snub. Like, I wholeheartedly believe that. And he's been a huge catalyst. But they swept the Giants, right? The Giants, who are in the thick of a race there in the National League West. The Blue Jays right now with Jose Berríos and Chris Bassett. It's not going to blow you away, but they're finding ways to get out. They're doing a really, really good job of that. And their offense 1-9, I think, has been relentless. And so you're kind of dealing with a group of guys that have been counted out. I didn't expect them to be in first place. I don't know if they expected it, if they're being really honest. But, you know, a guy like Addison Barger, who's in their lineup right now, has been huge for what they've done. Bo Bichette, right? Alejandro Kirk, who was an all-star. And so you kind of look up and down, and then I didn't even mention Vladdy, right? And then you have Vladdy, who's kind of cooled off, but he's finding his groove again. New York is going to have to step up. They're going to have to play some of their best baseball because the Blue Jays aren't going to give up the first-place spot. They're not. Like, you really have to go above and beyond in this series. I'm trying to look to see who the matchup is. I haven't looked. I don't know if you guys have it in front of you for today. Let's see. Who we got for the matchup here?
Well, Rodon's tonight. Yeah.
So Rodon. So again, Carlos has been his best, right? He's been a career best this year. That's just got to continue on the road. It's not really flashy what the Blue Jays do, but they play fundamental baseball. My gripe, I think, over the weekend with New York, like, there were some sloppy errors. There's some sloppy play. Like, that doesn't fly in the big league. And that's got to get cleaned up right away. I don't know why it keeps happening, but when you play a team like Toronto, like, that absolutely has to get sorted out, or you're going to get embarrassed throughout these next couple of games. Toronto is a powerhouse. They're one of the best teams in baseball right now, and they just do it with a really complete team.
That they do.
That's true.
I think you have Schlittler going on Tuesday,
and then Fried
is back in the Yankee rotation.
Great.
Yeah,
that's great news, right? That's a huge deal. And again, like, Brian Cashman's trying to find that extra starter, but you already are without Cole and Clark Schmidt. You're waiting for Luis Gil to come back. You don't know what shape he's going to be in. You don't know how he's going to perform. I'm not going to say I'm assuming the worst from him, but I can't put pressure on him yet. And so to support, especially with that blister from Free, you got to bring somebody in sooner than later. The market right now, there's so many teams who think they're still in it. So it's interesting to see which direction Brian Cashman will go. But that's a great lineup. If I'm going into the postseason with those guys, Fried and Rodon, healthy, almost full strength, and then maybe you have Schlittler, who is coming on right now. He's the new guy. I don't know. I feel pretty confident. But again, my gripe has been the consistency with which this team is not playing with, and that's the biggest deal.
We'll see how it all plays out tonight. And of course, you can hear all Yankee games right here on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. Danny, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us here, and we'll get back in touch as we get deeper into the summer.
My guys, thanks so much for having me. Enjoy the week, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds good. Danny. Thank you, Danny. Danny Wexelman with us here on Big Board Sports. Yankees and Blue Jays separated by 3 games atop the American League East. So big series. The Red Sox are still right there. They dropped 2 out of 3, but they're 5 back, I believe. They 5 out? Is that sound right?
Yeah.
5 out. And then Tampa. No, I think Tampa's 5. Tampa 5 out?
I think Tampa's 5 out.
And
Boston might be 4 out.
6.5. I don't know.
I got you. Let's see. Yankees.
It's 3
five.
From
They're
the top.
5 out. You're right. Boston's 5 out.
Okay,
yeah.
Boston's 5 out.
Tampa's
and then
6.5.
Ray's 6.5. I had it right. Okay. We'll get to the Mets storyline. They are still right. No blood this weekend. No blood.
Yeah.
Phillies had a rough weekend. Mets lost 2 out of 3. Still a half game lead by Philadelphia in the NL East going into tonight. All right. We'll get to more on the baseball coming up. But NFL training camp start this week. Tomorrow, the Giants open up training camp. We'll check in with Jordan Rodon from ESPN.com next on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio. NFL training camps ready to go. Giants tomorrow means busy times for Jordan Rodon. Always busy, but now ramp it up. Camp is ready to open. Jordan Rodon covering the New York Giants with ESPN.com, and nobody does it better than Rodon. We always appreciate him joining us here for a few minutes on the eve of start of training camps. Jordan, how are you?
Guys, yeah, summer's over, you know, for us.
Yeah.
Unfortunate reality.
No doubt
it
is.
It's so early, too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It does. I mean, it's before you know it, it'll be kickoff to the season. But plenty of storylines between now and then. And I don't know. The buzz is the Giants are just going to be better this year, Jordan. But I just don't know what that's going to translate into in terms of wins and losses.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, they have a very tough schedule. They went 3-14 last year. We watched that. That was really bad. They've made improvements, especially on the defensive side. But what's the offense going to look like, right? We understand they got new quarterbacks. That's where all the talk's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But what's Russell Wilson? How big a difference is that going to make immediately? And then the big question hanging over the Giants, and the one that I'm going to be asked 10 million times this summer, this fall, is when are we going to see Jackson Dart?
Yeah, that is the question. I'll ask you now. I mean, what is your take? I mean, I hear everybody has an opinion on that, but I think most everyone feels that Dart is going to get his chance this season to play.
Yeah, I think that, look, from everything I know and you know what I've heard, it sounds like the Giants want to play Russell Wilson until they can't play Russell Wilson anymore, right? Whether it be he gets banged up and he's injured, whether it be they're losing and they just, you know, they need to bring in a new voice, a new face, the future, whatever it may be. But until that point, they want to stick to Russell Wilson, try to win as many games as possible, and then go from there. And if it so happens and it works out that way, that they have some success and they don't have to turn to Jackson Dart, they are okay with that. They're all right with this being sort of like a redshirt year, a la Patrick Mahomes' rookie year in Kansas City. Like, they're all right if that's the scenario. That actually would probably be the Giants' best case scenario. But, you know, when you talk about you don't know what it's going to look like for success, then at some point, the savior job card is Jackson Dart.
Yeah, and that was my next question. So if you're Brian Daboll, I mean, the rookie quarterback, does he in many ways, is he your guy to keep your job? Because if they put Dart in there, whenever that happens to be, it's like, okay, we got to let Dart do his thing, and he's being coached up by, you know, Brian Daboll, and everything's going to roll into next season, and Daboll's still going to be the coach.
Yeah, I think absolutely. They all know that in the back of their minds. That's the sales pitch. This is the future. He's got to be the guy eventually in order for them to move forward and have success. So I do think at some point it'll at least be part of their thought process. You know, we need our pitch to ownership of, hey, we're moving in the right direction. But look with this guy. Like, we saw flashes of what he could do. If we just put him into that offense, imagine what our offense could be. That's the sales pitch for Brian Daboll and Joe Shane this year and moving forward.
Talking some New York Giants football with ESPN's Jordan Ronan here on Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team. ESPN Radio and the free 104.5 The Team app. Jordan, how excited are you and should Giants fans be to watch this defense, this Giants defense roll out this year, specifically that pass rush now with Abdul Carter, the number 3 overall pick as a member of the Giants?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that's the strength of the team, right? The defense, the pass rush in particular. What are they going to be? It'll be fun to see. How are they going to use Abdul Carter, right? They have Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau's on there as well. So how are they going to fit Abdul Carter into that mix? Are we going to see him at inside linebacker? Are we going to see him rush from the interior, a la Justin Tuck, you know, at times during his career? And I think we're going to see a little bit of all that. You're going to see him all over the field. And the Giants are going to try to find ways to use all three guys at the same time. And, you know, I didn't even mention Dexter Lawrence. So, you had those three guys, Dexter Lawrence, even a guy like Chauncey Golston, who they signed this offseason, Bobby Okereke, who's known as a pretty good blitzer. It should be a fun defense to watch. Now, their success is ultimately going to be capped by, can they score enough points and can they stop the run, right? Because you need to be winning and you need to be in passing situations, third and long, get the opposition into passing situations, third and long, and so forth. This way you can then pin your ears back, and that front that we're talking about can be utilized the way that you're planning on it, right? If you're at second and short, that front is going to mean nothing. If you're down 10 points at the end of every game and you're in catch-up mode, that front's going to be negated as well. So their success is somewhat contingent on whether the offense could score points and that defense could stop the run, which they haven't done a good job of the past couple of years. They've actually been really bad at it.
Did I hear you, and of course my colleague here is a big Cowboys fan, did I hear on another platform, maybe the show before us, did you actually pick the Dallas Cowboys to win the NFC East?
Yes, he did.
I did. So let me explain. So our NFC East reporters, everybody was picking. And because the Giants had the last mini camp, I was the last to get to it, right? Because I had to wait till their week was over to answer some of the questions. And as I'm going through it, I see, okay, Eagles, Commanders, like those, you know, everyone has those. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go outside the box here. The NFC East never goes the way we anticipate it to. The Giants going from 3-14, a division winner in a really tough division, probably a little too much to ask. But the Cowboys, I do believe that people are sleeping on the Cowboys. Now, I don't think they're a Super Bowl team, and I know they're easy to make fun of. But when Dak Prescott plays, that team is guaranteed 10-plus wins a year, usually in the 12-win range. And so you know, is it out of the realm of possibilities that the Dallas Cowboys can win this division? I don't think it is. But I went with the Cowboys. And I think they're going to be better than people think, and they're a dangerous team. And by the way, the Giants haven't beaten them in, what, 5 years?
Yeah.
And they lost.
And they got the second game in?
Yeah, second game in Dallas. They're going to be big underdogs in that game no matter what. And so it's going to be a tough game for them. The first two games are tough. They really need to get a split, right? I think in any way possible, on the road against Washington, on the road against Dallas, two division games. Can't go. Once you start, if they start that 0-2 and have to come to the Chiefs in a prime time and you're already 0-2 in the division, it's going to be a long year. Yeah, right? Like they have to find a way to win one of those first two games.
Jordan, well, last question from me real quick, arguably the most important. Was your wife able to listen to the great work that you and Dave Rothenberg did when filling in?
No, it was actually a topic of conversation. So
it was. She,
just for people who don't know, my wife does not listen to any. Like, I did morning radio in New York, and she did not listen. She rarely does, like, watches when I'm on TV as well. It was a topic of conversation this weekend with other couples. Her thought process is that she gets nervous for me that I'm going to mess up or be upset. Yeah. And then that's why, hence, she doesn't listen. Dave Rothenberg, the host of, you know, ESPN New York, DPHO, and Rothenberg, he was saying, my wife doesn't love me. That's a result of her not really loving me. So I don't know. We'll have to look further into it as we go along here.
For a funny bit, I thought it was a good line.
My wife doesn't watch or listen because she just doesn't really care.
Oh, that's good.
My wife doesn't care at all. I actually asked my wife if she can name a Giant right now, and she came up empty.
Yeah.
I cover the Giants for a living.
No.
She's like, Daniel Jones isn't there anymore. Saquon's not there anymore. She's like, what's the quarterback's name? Timmy?
Oh,
Timmy?
No.
And she couldn't come up with Tommy DeVito.
That's interesting. My wife's a huge Philadelphia fan, so she's all about the Eagles, and I will give her that. She watches NFL every Sunday, but mainly because of the Philadelphia, but that's not a bad team to be a fan of these days. They're pretty good.
Yeah, my wife is from Philly area, too, and her whole family is Eagle fans, but she just doesn't care about sports. Yeah. Yeah. She literally comes to games with me. She came to London, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and doesn't go to the game.
That's great. That's great.
It's funny.
Do some shopping.
Enjoy the experience.
I think in London, I'm like, I have a free ticket. It'll be fun. You'll sit with, like, basically the players' families. And she was like, no, I'm going to go to a show by myself. And she went to a show by herself in London.
I love it.
That's good stuff.
All right, man. Listen, I'll see you. We make our little annual trip the 29th. So we'll look you up next week.
We'll coordinate. Yeah.
I have it on my calendar.
Thanks,
buddy.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Thanks, Jordan.
Bye-bye.
Jordan Ronan with us, ESPN.com. Giants start training camp tomorrow, and we'll be there a week from tomorrow on July the 29th. Start of hour number two, and a new head coach in Glens Falls for the Adirondack Thunder. He was introduced officially last week, and we are joined by Sylvain Cloutier, the head coach of the Adirondack Thunder, returning to his old stomping grounds, a building where he spent playing for 8 years, and he's now the man in charge, the head coach of the Thunder. Sylvain, it's Roger Weiland, Michael Johnson Jr. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're good.
Thanks,
congratulations, man. Good to have you back.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Really happy to be back.
Yeah, I saw the introductory press conference. I love the story that you told about, and I'll let you further it on the radio, but when you finally got the official call that you got the job, you were pretty darn excited at that point.
Yeah, I was. I mean, I was waiting and waiting. We went through the interview process, and I was waiting for the phone call. I didn't know which day it was going to come. I was told it was going to be during the week, and I got it. I think it was on a Sunday, and the whole family, we're all sitting in the family room. We were talking about Adirondack and stuff, and I saw the phone number on my phone, which was Glenn Murkowski, either it's going to be bad news or it's going to be good news. So I took it outside and in the backyard on my deck, and everyone's watching through the window to see – the family room window and then the sunglass doors. And when Glenn offered me the job there, I did the fist pump, got down on one knee like I scored a goal and did the fist pump. So, no, it was exciting. And, yeah, like I said, like everyone's been texting me and calling me to say, you look so happy that in the pictures and stuff. Yeah, no, I'm proud. Like, I'm proud to be back, and I have a lot of passion for the area. I spent a lot of time there, you know, like 8 years in the Adirondack and then 3 with the River Rats. So I've had a lot of friends down there.
Yeah, big part of all of that, man. 8 years, three different teams, and when you step back in that at that building for the first time in a while, what were you thinking? A lot of memories come back and hit you pretty quickly.
Yeah, I did. I mean, when I walked in, you know, we used to walk in through the back door. I guess it was, you know, I call it the Civic Center still because that's what it was back then. But I was. Everything came back, right? You walk through those doors and you walk through the dressing room and you see where you sat for so many years. And then I walked onto the ice. You know, obviously there's no ice, but I walked into the arena. I walked on and just looking around and stuff. And you start thinking, you know, this is where you played your first pro game, first goal, pro goal, your first fight. You know, it's where my wife moved down with me. It's where we started our life. So, yeah, no, a lot of memories, and they're all good memories.
Yeah, for sure. And you had a great career, great run, and now you get to roll up your sleeves and see what you can do as the head coach. Although you've had a lot of coaching experience, right? I mean, we talk about your playing days, but you've been in the coaching ranks for quite some time, right, Sylvan?
Yes, I have. I mean, I coached over in Europe for 5 years. Right now, actually, guys were competing for teams from over there are competing with us, try to convince them to go over there. I've coached at the junior level, the pro level, and the last 3 years I was in Corpus Christi in the North American Hockey League, where we sent our players to Division One or Division Three. You know, it was they brought me in there to rebuild their program. They hadn't made the playoffs, I think it was 7 years, and last year we made the playoffs. We were in the top 10. We beat all the records in Corpus Christi history with wins and points, even counting their pro days and winning percentage. So it took us a while to build it there. As you know, the turnaround in junior is pretty quick with guys graduating or moving on to another higher level. So, no, I've been coaching for a while now, and I'm excited to work with these guys. And, yeah.
How much work do you have to do right now? I mean, let's talk about the, you know, what you are currently working on. I mean, listen, one thing hasn't changed is that there's the crowd support in Glens Falls. I mean, that place, the Cool Insuring Arena, the sellouts and the fan support, you know, all that's coming. And obviously they want to see a winner on the ice. What kind of team can you put together? What do you have coming back? What's your take? And it's early yet, but what are we looking at for a new team for you?
Yeah, I mean, we, you know, obviously what happened last season, finishing at the bottom and not making the playoffs is something definitely don't want to repeat. So myself and Ben are working extremely hard to add some pieces. There's some really good pieces to our lineup, guys coming back, and you hope those guys are going to take a step forward after playing last season. And also, we have a great relationship with New Jersey and Utica, so we'll be getting some bodies down from them, and we're going to have to mix and match those pieces. But our team's definitely going to be working hard and compete, and you know, we're trying to add guys that play a physical style. I like my teams to play a heavy game, so right now that's the character guys we're trying to find, and the guys are willing to play that style.
And you remember the fan support, right? Even back when you were playing, what were the crowds like back in those days?
Yeah, I mean, the fans have always been there. I mean, back in the Red Wing days when I was there, yeah, we made the playoffs and we were towards the bottom always fighting, but we always got, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 people there. The community has always embraced hockey in Glens Falls. And you know, even when they had the competition with the two teams and when we played each other, like it was sellout in Glens Falls and Albany had big crowds. So there's a lot of hockey fans. They know the game very well. You know, when you come there to play, everyone knows you. So you become part of that community, and I think that's a big part of it. And So I'm excited, especially when I'll step behind the bench and coach in front of these fans. And I know how passionate they were, and I'm a passionate person. A lot of emotion, so it'll be an exciting time.
Yeah, and that'll be a surreal moment for you. There's no question about that as we talk with Sylvain Cloutier. He's the new head coach in Adirondack. The building hasn't changed, though, right? It looks pretty much the same as it did when you played there, right?
Yeah, it has. I mean, obviously, it's a new scoreboard, which is really nice. We didn't have that back in the day. The dressing rooms, everything's been redone, right? The boys have a lounge. They have a little kitchen. The coach's office is a lot nicer than the coach's office I used to get called into. It's very professional, and the players, you know, they got everything they need there for sure to succeed.
Well, welcome back, my friend. It'll be a pleasure to cover you again. I covered you as a player. I've been in Albany for 39 years, so I was here for your years and many others. So good to have you back as head coach. I think they make a great choice here, and look forward to seeing your team play and covering your teams. And thank you for joining us here for a few minutes on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, no, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be back, and I look forward to seeing you and catch up too when you come and watch our team. And you guys ever need me on that, don't hesitate to call me anytime.
Well, we'll work that out. We have in the past couple of years done a regular segment, a coach's segment for, you know, 5 to 6, 7 minutes one day a week just to promote your team and your product and
we'll
talk about
back,
the
yeah.
Thunder. So we can see what day works for you, and we'll go through Rob and the proper channels, and we would love to set a regular thing up with you once the season gets ready to roll.
All right. No, that'd be awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Sylvain. Take care.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
Again.
Okay. Thank you very much. Have a great day.
You too.
You too.
Bye now. That's Sylvain Cloutier back in his old stomping grounds as the head coach.
Good hire.
And Big Board Sports sponsored by DeCrescenti. Our good friends at DeCrescenti, CJ, Mike O'Malley, and the whole gang, and rolling out the Saranac Blueberry Blonde, big, big hit this summer, along with the Heineken Silver and the Sun Cruiser Iced Tea and Vodka or Lemonade, and that is gluten-free, and brand new, the Montucky Gold Snacks, the snackable light lager, all part of the DeCrescenti Drink Responsibly program, as we welcome Frank Miramonte. How many times do we say his name on TV?
Yeah.
Man, oh man, oh man. Yeah. And Frank Miramonte has the stretch call. Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I feel great, and I'm glad you're pronouncing my name correctly. If it's going to come out so many times, you don't want to come with Mirabaldi or Miramonte, so thank you.
No, we got it.
We got it all down,
but
yeah.
As you know, what we do with the stretch calls every night, we run the feature race, at least we do on WNYT, and every night it's the race day recap and whatever the feature race is, and Frank Miramonte has the stretch call. Doing a great job. How you feel a couple of weeks in, my friend? Everything good?
I feel great. I mean, we got a long haul ahead of us, but you know, we celebrate every opportunity to call at this historic venue, and what a great feature we had yesterday with the Honorable Miss. When are you going to get Erad Ortiz Jr. and Rigney Racing and get that kind of money again? I'll answer for you. Never.
Yeah,
so
never.
It just goes to show you, prices are to be had at Saratoga. Anything is possible, and huge, huge payoffs. And a lot of great racing. And what about that storm yesterday? When I came on the air, because we were showing a graphic, and so the fans across the country who were not at Saratoga or nearby, they come back and they see a sloppy track. And what I actually said is, you had to see it to believe it, ladies and gentlemen, if you weren't here, because that storm, and I know for you guys it's nothing, but you know, for me that's quite the storm. In and out, 10 minutes, sloppy track, looked like hail, and then all of a sudden everything's fine. That was wild.
It was wild, I was at a birthday party for my 1-year-old grandson, and we were out at Broad Auburn, and it wasn't doing anything there. It was fine, and then it did hit quickly. But yeah, and it wasn't the first time we've had one of those. Like a week or so ago, on a Friday into a Saturday or a Thursday into a Friday, where I get the loss of the days. But it was no more than 20 minutes to a half hour, and that was the day where we had all the damage to right next to Bill Mott's office. A big willow tree was down. Tim Wilkins shot video of that. We ended up running it on our newscast that night. But man, they don't have to be very long, but they do pack a punch, Frank.
I think that was the day that Tim posted some flood. I'm thinking, we're canceling today for sure. And the next thing you know, by the time I got to work, it was a perfect day. You can't even imagine. But that's the beauty of it. Even when it goes bad with the weather, it can recover so quickly and get us back to racing time. That's what it's all about, and everyone loves it.
No doubt. Frank, we were there on
that was just crazy, though, yesterday.
Yeah, crazy prices. There were some crazy payouts on Friday for, like, a $1 exact. I mean, There are those races you say, boy, I wish I were on that. I wish I had the superfecta in that race. Look what that payout is. But that's the beauty of Saratoga and the reason we all like to bet. They're trying to make some money like that. What happened on Saturday? The Scottish Lassie rolling, and I know LaCara, the big morning line favorite for Mark Cassie, had to scratch because of a quarantine issue in the barns. And then Scottish Lassie, a 15.5 length victory, Frank.
That was just an absolute sight to see. It was hard to believe what was happening because, you know, the favorite in there, Merced, had a, you know, perfect setup. She was right off of her. And in fact, you know, it almost looked like Scottish Lassie cut her off going into the first turn. In fact, she's lucky that wasn't a little more egregious and the margin of victory was so large, because she basically sawed her off going into the first turn. And it was lucky that, again, it was a complete blowout, and it wasn't like a blatant stop, but it was close. But that was a performance that certainly was a jaw-dropping one, and those connections have to be on cloud nine right now. I mean, you get a win like that at Saratoga in a big race, you got a lot to be happy about. And when you're a distaffer, I mean, the value of that filly went up so much with that win. Good for the connections. They deserve it.
Yeah, and I would assume that horse, Scottish Lassie, with jockey Joel Rosario probably being pointed to the Alabama.
I mean, that's the logical situation for sure.
Yeah.
That was a performance that could not be ignored. And she just, you know, she took a lot of late money, too. So someone got their money down in time. She was hovering right around 4-1 and ended up getting hammered late. So someone cashed. Sounds like it wasn't you, but somebody did.
And by the way, Saturday's attendance, 32,919 at Saratoga, 32,919. And I'll get to why it's only going to ratchet up from here on out with the rest of this meet. What did you make of journalism winning the Haskell? And I haven't heard anything yet, but, you know, where does journalism go next? To California, we won't see journalism Saratoga, or is Michael McCarthy still trying to figure out what he's going to do next? I did not hear the aftermath, but I did see a terrific finish and another great performance by journalism on Saturday.
It's really amazing how he just keeps getting victories when he looks like he has absolutely no chance.
No doubt.
So, he had no shot again. But especially at Monmouth, I spent 8 years there, so I know you're not going to close with that trip too often and get up unless you're an absolute superstar. And just, but what he's doing for the fans of the game and the connections with these dramatic races, I mean, he has a fan base that won't quit. That was an incredible, incredible rally once again. Michael was interviewed. I saw the interview, and he said they're going back home first. I just don't know if he wants to see Sovereignty again, but, you know, he's, you know, it's like boxing. You got to knock off the champ. I mean, journalism has had a year that by any stretch would be a championship year. He would be the front runner. He would be pretty much a mortal lock in most cases, but you got to beat Sovereignty to get that. And he's lost him twice. So the question is, does he come for another round of that? Or does he just maybe take on the older horses, the Pacific Classic? I don't know the answer, but one thing we know about Michael, you know, he's let this horse do and tell him what to do and let him go to all the dances. So it's not going to be because of any kind of fear factor.
No.
If they feel he's ready to deliver his best, they got to take a shot. And remember, as good as Sovereignty has looked, and quite frankly, he has looked unbeatable, His victory at the Belmont was such a devastating kick. But these are horses, and we see it every day. I mean, we really see it at Saratoga, year after year. So, if it was that easy, we wouldn't have to work, right? We would just know that the horses can't get beat, but they get beat. A lot of things can happen. And remember, 5 lengths of a horse, which is considered a blowout victory, is exactly 1 second. So a lot of horses endure more than 1 second of trouble in a race. And so anything can happen, and journalism certainly, if Sovereignty's not at his absolute best, journalism can beat him. So I certainly hope they get together in the DraftKings Traverse, but only time will tell. He's got to get back. He's had a rough campaign, man. It's been busy. He's been all out a couple times, but the horse loves running. And I wonder if he knows what kind of drama he is creating with these devastating kicks in the late stages of these races.
Well, whatever he decides to do, I'm a fan of Michael McCarthy. He's not ducked anything. He's done everything he could ask. So if he ends up going to California, I will certainly understand what his mindset is. And then I said, Frank Miramati with us, Saratoga track announcer here on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team. Frank, this weekend for me, this is kind of when it ratchets things up. You've got the Curling on Friday and the Jim Dandy on Saturday, and then you can roll into the Whitney and the Alabama and the Travers. But this weekend to me, kind of end of July and you roll into August, that's when Saratoga starts to really pick up in terms of attendance and handle and everything else. And I'm anxious to see the Curling on Friday, and then we get the Jim Dandy, the big Travers prep on Saturday.
I'm so excited. You're absolutely right. The beauty of Saratoga is it's like you're in a batting cage, and the big stakes just keep coming at you. And, the next several weekends are one better than the next. But we will see huge crowds. We saw big crowds this weekend. You're absolutely right that the volume gets turned up, and more and more people are traveling in. I've got some friends that are already starting to arrive tomorrow night, and there are all kinds of groups. The beauty of Saratoga is it's kind of an annual reunion for so many people. They just, they plan around certain dates, and like clockwork, they're there every single year, and we're looking forward to having those fans and make sure that we delight them.
Fair enough, Frank. Enjoy your day off, a couple of days here before you crank it back up on Wednesday, and hope you have a couple slices of pizza along the way, my friend.
Oh, that's right.
I'll be at Federici's in 29 minutes in Freehold, and they're about to get a call to have 2 pies ready. One for now, one for later.
There you go, my man. Frank, I'll see you in the press box.
Thanks,
my friend.
Frank.
Take care.
Looking forward to it, guys. Thanks
Thank
for
you,
me.
Frank. Frank Miramati, track announcer. Saratoga
loves a
race
good pie.
Course.
Loves a good pizza.
He does. And can't wait for that to crank up, huh? Nittany Lion fight song.
Got two
Penn
of them
State.
Right now.
Let's go. We are, baby. Yeah. Good morning, Pete Doherty. How are you?
Morning, Roger. If you have me on this fall, I expect that walk-up music every time. That's great.
I got
great
a cover,
stuff.
Pete.
Yeah, I know. It's great stuff. And if Penn State doesn't win a national championship this year, my friend, I think we're going to just go down there and yell and scream at Coach Frank.
I'd be a part of that, yeah.
I think you're right. They certainly got the talent this year.
Yeah.
Hoping, obviously, they got that big game at Ohio State. But, so many teams make the college football playoff now that, they should have a path to get there. So we'll see if the talent prevails.
Hey, the NFL training camp start this week. Are we back in the Times Union with the NFL picks? Where's that stand?
I believe we have. I haven't checked into it, but I know that their new sports editor, Michael Kelly, is a fan. So I'm sure we'll be back for what would be the 25th year.
Ooh,
hard to believe.
Love
you
it.
And I being the only ones that have been through all 25 years.
25 years. it's been an awful lot of fun. All right, I ask you a little impromptu with Pete here. We appreciate a few minutes. You're covering the Epson Tour and the Casella Golf Championship on Friday at Pine Haven Country Club, and we sent a camera out there, and I was looking and watching the leaderboard. I was working in Saratoga. All of a sudden, I see a DQ next to Kennedy Sweetick's name, our local product from Albany Academy, and I'm like, what the heck happened? And then you sent me what did happen, and I thought it was a very – that's a tough call to DQ her over using an unapproved yardage book. Don't you think that's over the top?
I was listening to your discussion earlier, and I certainly agree. It's too harsh a penalty for that.
The issue is it's kind of twofold. One, they have the rule in place, so they had to follow the rule. You know, I think the bigger question is whether why do they have the rule? And my thinking on it, and if there's an Epson Tour official listening to this and wants to let me know otherwise, I'd be glad to hear it. But my understanding is for each tournament, the Epson Tour prints a bunch of yardage books, and it's essential for these players because most of them have not seen the course, or maybe they saw it once last year or whatever. So you really need a yardage book to learn your way around the course. Well, they print up these yardage books, these official yardage books, and sell them in the pro shop, and probably make some money. I know the pro shop makes a little money. I'm sure the tour makes a lot of money, and that becomes the official yardage book. Well, Anders and Kennedy had one from 3 years ago. Well, I guess they changed this rule a couple of years ago that you had to use an approved yardage book. Neither one knew about it, and that's why Anders got caught with he's the one that had the yardage book in his pocket, and he didn't realize there's anything wrong with that. And that's why they get disqualified. It's a dumb rule. They had to disqualify her because it's in the rule book. I guess my question is, why is it in the rule book? Why do they insist on having this money grab at the beginning of the tournament to try to soak money out of the players for these official yardage books when, a lot of players back in the old days, you made your old yardage book. They just, would take basically a notepad out and draw the holes and try to figure out what the yardages were from various things. They would be walking off the yardages before you had a gauge to do that. And they made their own. Now you have to have the official yardage book or nothing. And it just doesn't seem to be fair to penalize that harshly for what I think is a bad rule.
Yeah, I mean, why couldn't they have made an exception, Pete, for Swedick, who's A, she's local and drawing crowds over there. You might want to think about that. She's also an amateur. You're not going to win that tournament. And I don't, from what you wrote and the comments I got from her coach, this was not an unfair advantage. It's not like this was a big deal at all. I don't know why you couldn't have just given her a slap on the wrist or a warning that they didn't know and moved on. Who would have complained about that?
Well, I don't think you can do that, though, if you have the rule in place, because that would be playing favorites. If a experienced player did the same thing, she would have been disqualified too. So I don't think he could play favorites. I think a bigger question here is, how did they find out their playing partner, both tour regulars? Did one of them report and said, "Hey, looks like he's got a yardage book that's not legal"? I mean, that's what I really wonder about. I mean, there were she had a pretty decent crowd following her, so it could have been anybody that brought it to their attention. But it took them 11 holes to figure this out, and then they immediately disqualified. They didn't give the two-stroke penalty, figuring that, well, she must have used the yardage book more than once, and I think she probably did. But, again, you can't just randomly enforce a rule that you have. The problem is the rule itself, I think, and I think that's what they need to look at. Once they found the violation, they had to disqualify her.
Ooh, I think that's
brutal.
Top there, but that's too bad. And then you didn't cover. Did you cover the final round, or actually Joyce did?
Yeah, Joyce did have a little injury that took me out for the weekend, but Joyce took care of it. And I'm kind of wondering about next year. I know you've talked about it a little bit too, whether they are coming back. The tour wants to come back, but Jimmy Miller wants to step aside. I think he said yesterday that he will help out if they find someone that can take over, but I'm not sure they can find it. Jimmy did an awful lot of work. It's not easy to find sponsorships for it, and I'm starting to wonder if 41 years, maybe it's run its course. And, we had nothing in our paper on Sunday. It's just an oversight. And I don't know if we got any calls, people, why didn't you have it covered? Maybe we did. I don't know. I'm not close enough to the office to realize that, but I kind of wonder if people have grown weary of it. They can't seem to find a good time of year. This is during Saratoga, so they don't get the media coverage that they would if they could get it outside that Saratoga window. But the Saratoga window has expanded so much over the past 10 years that it's hard to have a summer golf tournament and not conflict with the track. So I don't know. I kind of wonder if it's coming back. I would call it 50-50 right now.
Mm. Pete, is Scottie Scheffler the next Tiger Woods?
I think he's the next Max Homa.
Yeah. Or Jordan Spieth, right? Twofold.
Yeah. He certainly as close as golf has gotten there. since Tiger, but I don't think, I mean, he's still got a long ways to go. He's only won four majors. They said if he keeps at his current pace, he might get to 12 majors by the time he's 38, which is still three majors short of Woods. It's certainly possible it's there. I don't think he'd ever match Tiger in terms of what he did for golf. I mean, just how Tiger brought minorities into golf and just captivated everybody. I don't know if Scheffler has that same kind of appeal. Certainly the golf game itself, and I love his personality. I just think he's not cocky at all. He really seems to be appreciative, but I don't think he has quite the, I don't know what it is, the star power or whatever the Tiger had. He may match his accomplishments. I think it would take some really good golf over the next 8 to 10 years to do that. But I don't think he'll ever match what Tiger did for the game itself.
And then back on the Epson Tour, yeah, I hope it comes back. I mean, I was there live Thursday. I did all my hashtag Raj on the Road there Thursday, and we had Jimmy on it. 440, and I think the Epson Tour wants to come back, and Jimmy still wants to be involved, but I think he just wants to do the sponsorships only, which is an awful lot of work. I mean, that purse was $200,000, probably needs a little be more than that, and then to find someone else to run the day-to-day, that's going to be the issue.
Yeah, that's the lowest purse on tour. This and one other tournament, $200,000. Every other purse on the tour, and they have 20 tournaments, is larger than $200,000. So they really want to up that, but whether they have the financial base here, I don't know. I got the impression that's the type of stuff that Jimmy was getting tired of having to deal with, just trying to, get blood from the stones, as they say. He's gone to a lot. He doesn't have as many connections as he would like in the corporate world, and he thought maybe if someone else came in that maybe had more connections with corporations around Albany, he could easily get the money they need. I just got the impression that's the frustration he had with some of the other things he enjoyed doing, but I don't know. I'm not sure what happened to the concert on the course this year. He used to have that Saturday night concert, yeah. Really, I thought added to the event, and that fell through this year. So that's why I'm just kind of wondering, has it run its course, or is there still enthusiasm for it among the public? I didn't see what the crowds were like this year. The weather is really nice, so the crowds shouldn't have been too bad. They were certainly decent following Kennedy around. And, I should probably make one more point about it. I think Jimmy knows how I feel about this. I thought he should have gotten Hayden Knapp into the field. She played last year. She just won the state women's amateur. She won. She beat Kennedy by one stroke. And I thought she should have gotten the second sponsor's exemption. Instead, they gave it to a friend of a sponsor. And I'm not sure that that was the way to go. You would have gotten more media coverage if you had two local players playing in it. And once Kennedy got DQ'd, then you had no one of local interest to root for. People would have followed Kennedy around Saturday, even if she was 10 shots behind, because she's Kennedy and she's really wonderful to watch. Thought they could have used another local player, and they have at least two now that are good enough to at least hold their own against the pros. And I just thought that was a mistake on Jimmy's part.
Yeah. I hope it doesn't go away. I like to keep things around, and we don't like to lose stuff, but it's 41 or 42?
41, and there's actually a 42nd year. They did a pro-am during the COVID year. They didn't do a full tournament. They did a one-day pro-am in 2021, I want to say. Maybe it's 2020, okay. where Kennedy actually played in that, too, and played pretty well. But 1984, I believe, was the first year, and it's been a tradition. It's moved around different courses. They've had different charities that have benefited, but I think it's a long time for it. It's the longest one on tour. It'd be nice to see it keep going, but you don't want to make it a money loser, and you want to be able to attract the good golfers here as much as you can. And you certainly want to attract the fans. And right now I kind of wonder, again, if it's just going to be too difficult to do that.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Pete, always a pleasure. We'll get back in touch as we close in on the NFL season.
We'll talk in the fall and have our we'll just turn it into a weekly Penn State segment. How's that?
I can handle that. Go Lions. We are Penn State, baby. We are. Thank you, Pete Doherty. Big Board Sports sponsored by Delmonico's Italian Steakhouse. Two great locations, Central Avenue in Albany and the other right up off Exit 9 in Clifton Park. Never a bad meal at Delmonico's. All right, NFL training camps are set to roll this week. That would include the Jets, and we're joined by Jake Asman from New York Radio, and he covers the Jets, and we appreciate him popping by for a few minutes. Yeah. Hello, Jake. How are you?
What's up, Jake?
Roger, Mike, appreciate you guys having me on.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
As always,
our pleasure.
What are the headlines as you get ready to cover this Jets team?
I think the biggest thing is Aaron Glenn, right? You got a brand new head coach who obviously was one of the better players in franchise history. He takes over, got a new GM as well, so a full-scale, you know, regime change. First time that's happened for the Jets where the coach and GM are both entering the first year together since about a decade ago in 2015 with Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagnan. So what exactly does an Aaron Glenn training camp look like? I think that's a big thing. Got a bunch of new coaches, of course, as well. And then Justin Fields, right? New quarterback replacing Aaron Rodgers. Is Fields going to do what Sam Darnold did in Minnesota a year ago, or Baker Mayfield the last couple of years, or even Geno Smith in Seattle, like a guy who was picked high in the draft that kind of bounced around and then all of a sudden, you know, found his way with a new team? Could the Jets actually be a team that could develop Justin Fields into what he was thought to be when he was picked by Chicago years ago? So I think Glenn, new regime, and Fields are probably the two biggest storylines entering training camp.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, and it might just be a new coach because it does seem like they have talented players. And I'm not saying they're going to be this great team and make a deep run in the playoffs, but they do seem to have enough talent to make a run at least to the playoffs.
Well, that's the big thing, right? And I think that's what it was so disheartening for so many fans the last couple of years. You know, you had talent on this team. I mean, obviously the news last week of the Jets extending Garrett Wilson and Sauce Gardner speaks volumes of the talent they have with those two players, but it goes even beyond them, right? I mean, you look at the defense as a whole, you have a former first team all pro on all three levels of the defense, Quincy Williams, Sauce Gardner. You obviously have really good edge rusher talent in Jermaine Johnson, who's going to be back this year. He made the Pro Bowl in 2023 before he missed most of last year when he got hurt in week two. Will McDonald had 10.5 sacks last year. So that's just the defensive line with Quinton Williams, with Jamie and Sherwood, who this new regime made a priority to bring back. He was voted team MVP a season ago. Plus, you still have Michael Carter as one of the better nickel corners in the league. And then, you know, you look at the offense. Obviously, there's Garrett Wilson. You still have Breece Hall. They drafted Mason Taylor pretty high in the draft in the second round to be their new tight end. And at least on paper, this is probably the most talented offensive line the Jets have since 2015 or even before then. And you look at the two bookend tackles in the first round the last 2 years, and Olu Fashanu at left tackle and Armon Membu they used the 7th pick on this past year. So there is talent on this team. There's just a lot of unknowns because of the uncertainty with the head coach and first-time play caller in Tanner Engstrand. And then obviously Fields, who we talked about, talented, but has never really put it all together just yet. So if they're coached well and Fields takes a step, I agree. I think they can be a lot better than most think, and maybe they can fight for one of the playoff spots in the AFC.
Talking with Jake Asman here on Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio, the free 104.5 The Team app. He hosts the Jake Asman Show. Check it out on YouTube, of course. That's great work, 880 ESPN and Mad Dog Radio, too. Jake, what are your expectations? What should Jets fans' realistic expectations be surrounding their running back, Breece Hall, heading into year three?
You know, it's so critical that he's healthy, because when he's healthy, he's gone out there and he's been one of the better backs in the league. You know, it's amazing. A year ago, I think there were a lot of people that were drafting Breece Hall in the top three in their fantasy draft.
Yeah.
You know, he was a guy in 2023 that was coming off the ACL injury his rookie year. And then he goes out there and he's second behind just Christian McCaffrey in total yards from scrimmage. But last year, he had a bad year. Some of it, I'm sure, was the O-line was not good. They were 31st in run block win rate, which is terrible, obviously. But he himself did not play well, and he admitted that when he spoke to the press before they broke for summer. It's a big year for Breece. You know, he's going into a contract year. He wasn't a first-round pick, so he doesn't have that fifth-year option. So, you know, for Breece, it behooves him to obviously have a big year. It would help the Jets, of course, if he does that, because I think the goal for this Jets team is they want to run the ball. I mean, they have made it pretty clear. They want to be a run-first team. It wouldn't surprise me if they lead the NFL in rushing attempts between Fields and obviously Breece. And behind Breece, you got Braylon Allen, who impressed last year at times. So it's a big year for Breece, because if he's healthy, I still think he's too talented of a player to not have a big impact in an offense that should, you know, basically play to his strengths as a runner.
What's a realistic win-loss total for the Jets, in your opinion, preseason here as you survey this team?
Yeah, it's tricky because you look at most of the the odds, it's around 5.5, and I do think they could be better than that, but I'm not going to go as far as saying they're a 9 or 10 win team. I'm around 6 or 7. If you told me they won 7 or 8, I wouldn't be shocked at all. It's just a lot of question marks. I think a lot of Jet fans want to believe in Aaron Glenn. They want to believe that things are going to be different, but I really do think the last couple of years have done a ton of damage to the psyche of this fan base that usually tries to be optimistic before they can't when the game starts. So I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mindset, but ultimately, if they're better coached, we went through the roster, we went through the talent, it wouldn't surprise me if they're better than that, but I'm around 6 or 7 wins right now.
Jake, thanks so much for joining us to preview the start of Jets camp here this week, and we'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Jake.
There you go. Jake Asman from New York Radio covering the New York Jets.